So we're starting our class in the Jewish home. We're up to the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avot, and we're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We'll dedicate our learning tonight to the speedy recovery of Sarah Bat Esther. The fifth chapter takes us to a journey of numbers. The fifth chapter of Pirkei Avot enumerates things, and there's an advantage to numbers. It's an easy way to remember things. Numbers delineate. It's this and not more than that, not less than that. Numbers are exacting. The Mishnah says, "Ba'asara ma'amarot nivra ha'olam." When Hashem created the world, Hashem created the world with 10 sayings. Hashem said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Let the water produce the life of the water, the fish, etc., and they did. Now, it's interesting because the first thing we see in the Mishnah is the weight of speech. Hashem could have willed it. Hashem could have done other things. But no, it is described as Hashem's say-so. And one of the greatest and most underestimated tools in married life is speech. Things revolve far more around what you say than what you do. The greatest ills can be rectified. And the greatest gifts can be destroyed depending on what you say, how you frame it. What we say probably carries the greatest weight in our interpersonal relationships in general, and even more so in the home. And there are a myriad of examples. Let's take a simple example. You make up with your wife, you're going to pick her up at a certain hour, and you forget. So you show up 20 minutes late. You make up with your wife, you're going to shop for the groceries in the morning, and you forget. So now comes supper time, there's nothing there for supper. There can be a million things that you messed up. We're all human, fine. The question is, what's next? So here, it's a question of what you say. It's not a question of what you do. You're not going to be able to undo what you did. You're not going to be able to rectify it right away. It's also a question of what you do in the future. You know, if something repeats itself, that's sort of indicative that you don't care. But to a large extent, it's a question of what you say. And in order to understand this, let's take an example from the Talmud. The Talmud describes that when a peacock comes to mate, the peacock spreads its wings and bows its head all the way down. And after it mates, it bows out. So the Talmud says, what kind of conversation is going down? The Talmud says that when the peacock comes to mate, it tells its wife, I will make you such a beautiful garment, and spreads out all its different, the whole plume shows off all the colors, and says, I'll make you such a great garment. And after it's finished and it's bowing out, it says, I'm so sorry, I can't get these feathers off. What's going on here? How many times does she fall for that? Well, the Talmud is telling us something. That the strength lies in the capacity to express, you are dear to me, and I wish I could. All too often, we are busy expressing what can't be. Whereas, if we would change the frame of reference to, I wish I could, it would be a totally different conversation. Now, this is very tricky because we've discussed numerous times that men speak in the logic and women speak in the emotion. So let's take a simple example. You wake up in the morning, you have an important meeting, and your wife says, could you stay home to help me with the kids this morning? And your logic automatically kicks in, and you look at her with a look that says, are you crazy? And she looks at you all offended, and you don't understand what you want from my life. And you say just that. What do you want from my life? I don't understand. You know that my future in the company rests on this meeting today, and you know it's with all the big bosses. And what do you want? And she says nothing, and she's all offended. And you look at her like, why is she offended? Where is she coming from? What does she want? So us men being very logical, simple beings, if we'd say, could you stay home this morning? What we'd mean is, could you stay home this morning, right? Very simple, yeah? What you say is what you mean. When a woman says, could you stay home this morning? So what she means is, yeah, I really wish you could stay home this morning. I also know that you can't stay home this morning, but I wish you could. So what does she want to hear from you? I wish I could. See, now what is the simple male response? But I can't. No, that's not the point of conversation. Let's start with what I wish I could. So I've had many couples that I told the husband the simple formula. I said, when she asks you something that seems irrational, don't explain to her why it's irrational. Stop and share with her the emotion. Yes, I would also like to stay home this morning. That's an interesting idea. Let me think. Should I call in sick? You guys are laughing. I'm very serious. I play it out. Meaning, don't come and say, no, this can't work because. Say, I want to. And I also would like to. So how do you mean this should work? Because I guess I'll be home many mornings if I lose my job. I guess. You guys are laughing, but I'm not joking. I'm not joking, you know. I'm not joking. I'm very serious. You have to be able to talk from her perspective. When she said it, she didn't mean logically, I want you to stay home this morning. She just wants you to lose your job. But this goes back to the old story of my good, good friend who came home, and I really love this guy. He came home after being married for a while, and his wife said, it's so hard to do the shopping every night. And what she wanted to hear is, yeah, you guys, you work so hard. And instead, being logical and male, his response was, so you want me to do the shopping every night? Okay, I'll do the shopping. And then he came home a few nights later, and his wife said, it's so hard to wash the floors. And he said, okay, I'll wash the floors before I leave for work. And then he came home a few nights later, and you could imagine the dishes, the floor, the toilets, the shopping. The guy today has been on the verge of collapse for years. And it's for lack of communication. She's not happy, he's not happy. Every time we get together, she says to me, I wish my husband would know to appreciate all the work I do. And that's all she wanted when she said all those lines. She's spending a lot of time on Facebook and other very important things, manicure, pedicure, and he's washing and cooking and cleaning and doing a whole bunch of things. Lack of communication. The dibur, the speech, is at the center of our relationship. And if we can master having good conversation, and good conversation begins by understanding the other side and being able to talk in correspondence with the other side's needs, so then we've already taken the most important step in bringing about shalom bayis. That the greatest difficulties are misunderstandings. And the greatest strength we have in a relationship is our capacity to speak. Everything else is secondary to that. Yeah. Right, but I think the first step is to agree and not to assume they want us to resolve. Meaning, very often they want you to commiserate, appreciate. First, agree. You know, if she says, you know, it's so hard, and you say, yeah, it is, wow. Now, she might be thinking, what a dunce. Why doesn't he offer to help? But she might only want that, and then you could have a conversation about it. Meaning, us men have a hard time with this dibur. Hashem created the world with 10 sayings. We can create everything we need in our marriage with what we say. And the speech is at the root of everything. So what you do is far less important. And there are many applications to this idea. The building of the marriage is all about what you say. And us men are very, very weak at having conversations. we know how to talk about goal-oriented subjects. So if she said that she's having a hard time doing the cleaning of the floors, then goal-oriented me answers, okay, I'll do the floors. Or, okay, maybe we should hire someone to do the floors. But what about having a conversation about the floor? No, that's not me. Don't talk to me about the floors. Us men, what are you talking to me about the floors? Just tell me what you want. No, she wants you to talk to her about the floors. So it's very difficult. And what do you suggest we do? Now, to a man, that sounds ridiculous. If she wanted to tell me, why didn't she just tell me? And the answer is no. She wants to think it through with you. She wants to talk to you about it. And maybe the conclusion will be you'll do the floors. And maybe the conclusion will be you'll split doing the floors. And maybe the conclusion will be you'll appreciate how hard she has it. But she wants to discuss it with you. And to us men, that's ridiculous. What's there to discuss? Tell me, do you want this, that, or the other thing? Bottom line, right? No, it doesn't work that way. Hashem created the world with speech, and we create our marriage with speech. The speech is the key to creation here. Yeah?
Say it's a general rule of thumb because this happens every day. When you go home and they ask how was your day, and you say fine, what you mean is nothing I had to fix, everything's fine. You ask her how her day was. You want, is there anything I need to fix? She wants to share everything with you. So that's a good rule of thumb, that how was your day? If I ask you as a man, something was broken, I had to fix it, or I did this or this, but I don't want to know what you have for your coffee break. Whereas with women, they want to talk about everything you did that day. It's just connecting and sharing. And it's not necessarily they don't want you to fix it.
Yeah, but that's a tool most men don't have. It's not natural to us. I'm giving you examples which sound like torture. He's talking to you about what she did during the coffee break. So Yehuda heard the story. Maybe Mike also heard the story. You know the story about the woman who goes shopping, right?
Yeah.
Mike, you want to tell it tonight? No, okay. Yehuda, you want to tell it tonight?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so the following story will be validated by all married men as being extremely accurate. The wife comes home and tells her husband, "You won't believe what happened today." And the husband's listening, and she says, "Well, I pulled into the supermarket and it was raining cats and dogs. And you know, the three kids were sitting in the back, Frankie, and this one was half asleep. And I couldn't find a parking spot near the entrance, so I had to park far away. And then, obviously, all the wagons out there were really wet. And by the time I got the kids out of the car, this one was crying and that one was fetching. And then I got them out and I put them in the wagon. And then there's the question, if they sit down in the wagon, you know, they'll get their pants wet and then they'll be wet the whole way till we get in until we get out. And I, fine, you know, we worked it out. Two of them held my hand, the other one stood in the wagon. And he behaved so nicely. It was a pleasure. And then we went in, and then I got one of those wagons. You know, the wheels squeak, and then one wheel got caught, and you can't really turn it so well. But okay, I was happy. I got into the store. Finally, everything was peaceful. Went into the store, and oh, it was such a pleasure walking into that store out of the rain. Even though I had to cross the whole parking lot that was so wet. Now then, I walked into the store with that squeaky, you know, that wagon that's hard to turn. And the prices there, you know, I thought the prices in our supermarket were expensive. You wouldn't believe the prices there. Tomatoes, oh, well, anyways, wait, I'll tell you. You won't believe it. Well, I was walking down the aisle, and on my way, I met Sprinty. Remember our neighbor? You know, the one who had a kid with the funny braces, and then we were talking, and our kid grew up, and now she's engaged, and it was so nice. But I had to keep going. You know, I was short on time, and then it was raining outside. I had to factor everything to take a little bit longer. And I'm walking down the aisle. I got the tomatoes, by the way, even though they were expensive. I wanted to make sure that you'd have the tomatoes for the salad the way you like. And I'm walking down the aisle. You remember that funny guy with the earring who takes care of the frozen aisle section? He's so nice. Every time he helps me out and he shows me the sales and he shows me which things are worthwhile to buy. And he was there and he was so nice, you know, like always. So I went. Okay.
Get to the point.
So you're sitting there with your tongue out. What's she telling me? And then you remember that dress we bought back when we were out in Brooklyn, and the salesperson promised me that it was the only one of its kind. And there was another one there with the exact same dress. But anyways, I was walking with the cart, and You guys get the point? So you're sitting there thinking, what's the point?
Right.
The point is, we're talking. No, there is no point. The point is, we're talking. And it's funny because the women who see this class, I was once at someone's home, and they said to a woman there, you have to see this class. And they put it on the computer, and I'm blushing, and the woman standing there turned red as a tomato. So the host was even worse than that. The host then turned to the woman and said, but tell me, is he exaggerating or is it the truth? So the woman walked out of the room. She couldn't answer. It's the truth. You'll all see, and you'll realize that this is about connection, and it's unnatural to us men, but we have to remember, Hashem created the world with 10 forms of speech, 10 sayings, and so too in our marriage, the speech is the key to creating our marriage. It's not about the gifts. If you can give her the feeling that she's the most important person in your life, that everything in your life revolves around her, then you've won her heart. And if you buy her all the gifts, but at the end of the day you cannot express that to her and make her feel that she's number one, then you're not going to have a happy marriage.
So we created ten
speeches? Right.
And you have 9.5 women?
Oh, that's another thing. That's it's a funny thing. I was with my daughter the other day, and I'm trying to get the kids out to Gan, and she's talking nonstop. And I'm trying to figure out what she wants, and she doesn't want anything. She's just talking. So I said, you know, why are you talking? There's nothing to talk about. This is my daughter. It's not my wife. So she says, no, my wife, I'd never say something like that to. But to my daughter, you know, I got to get the kids out. So she looks at me and she says, but I'm a girl. I was like, clear as day to her. What do you want from me? I'm a girl. I can talk. That's what we girls do. Okay, I was very surprised at such a young age. At least she was honest. But we have to realize that this is probably the most important point and the point that men have to work on the most. It's not for nothing that the classical cartoon or the classical picture has the wife talking and her husband with the newspaper in the morning. That's there because it's very natural for us to do that. The most natural thing for a man to do, I once saw a guy, this was a despicable sight. The guy's wife called, and he's talking to his friend. So he answers the cell phone, and he goes, yes, dear, puts it down. Talks to his friend. After about 30 seconds, he goes, yeah, wow, puts it down another 30 seconds. Now, if this were a comedy, you'd laugh, but this was his wife.
But the truth is,
but let me tell you, I got to see some giants in the Jewish world. And you know how they spoke to their wives? They'd lean forward and they'd look at them lovingly and look them in the eye and listen to their every word, because they cherish the human being that's talking. They realize that if this is their way of connecting, then if I want to connect to them, then I have to do it in their language. We're different, and we have to respect that difference, and we have to know that this is the key. This is where it all lies. If Hashem created the world in speech, we have to know speech is also where we're going to create our world. There's no other way. If you think you're going to be able to buy your wife's love, it doesn't work that way. There's no other key of connection that comes close to the power of speech. And so it's something we have to work on. I agree it's unnatural to us. But Hashem made a world where men marry women. If men would marry men, it would be much simpler. You know, we'd grunt. We wouldn't even talk. Huh? No, we don't say that. Go down to the lunchroom. You'll see the guys. Right? We don't. No. But Hashem obviously came to teach us something that we can develop within ourselves, and we can become better people out of it. And it's unfair to bring them to where we are. We have to go towards them. Obviously, there's a balancing act, but at the end of the day, this is probably the most crucial part, the most difficult part of marriage. Speech, talking nicely, having patience, talking kindly, not saying things that are hurtful, talking patiently. You know, these things sound easy, but they're not easy when you have a baby keeping you up half the night, and you're pacing there, and then you're half asleep, and out of sleep deprivation, there's a question, who's going to change that diaper, and who's going to burp the baby, and who's going to get the shower, and life suddenly gets down to the nitty-gritty. And it's important to remember that this is the key. This is probably the most important part of keeping a marriage ticking and keeping it happy. Yeah?
So you gave just this example of how women might try to connect to us, but we can't understand it and have something to work through. How speech is like their sort of connection. What would be an example of something we try to connect to them, but they don't understand us? And so we can tell them, look, you may not understand this. This is our way of connecting to you if you don't understand.
When you'll be ready for marriage, I'll tell you. I'm serious. There is. There is an area of communication that men communicate and women don't understand. But just like men have a hard time understanding women's speech, women have a hard time understanding men. So we said, "Basara ma'amarot nivra ha'olam." The world was created with 10 sayings. Uma Talmud lomar. Why? What was the Torah coming to teach us when the Torah said that the world was created with 10? God could have done it all in one say-so. Why did Hashem have to divide it into 10? Hashem came to show us how precious it is, so that those who destroy the world will be punished because they should have realized that they're destroying such a precious thing, the world that Hashem took 10 sayings to create, v'riten sachar tov latzadikim, and to give good wages to the righteous, shem kaimim et ha'olam shenivra ba'asara ma'amarot, that keep the world going, this precious world that was created with 10 sayings. So here there are multiple levels of understanding. We'll take a simple one. The Rasha is described as one who destroys a whole world. Which world does the Rasha destroy? So one understanding is, we're talking about his self-destructive nature. That the wicked person is really destroying himself. And Hashem says, you have the potential to be the whole world. Every one of us. The whole world began with Adam, with one person. So every person is like a whole world. And Hashem says, I created this whole world and I'm showing you how valuable it is. He who destroys it is taken to task. He who keeps it going gets good wages. I once had the good fortune of being en route to yeshiva, and when I got off the bus, there was another big rabbi who was the head of a court, Chief Dayan, who was headed to the same yeshiva. And I quickly ran up and I walked with him. And when we were walking, I asked him, what tips could he give me? I give a class on the Jewish home. What tip could he give me on how to keep a good home running? So he told me that when couples would come to him, so then what he would do is, after he listened to them, he'd stop and say to them, you two have such a good thing going. And he'd look at the good points in their marriage, point out to them their strengths, and then say, most couples don't have, and he'd show them A, B, C, and D that you guys have. I'm surprised that just because of such frivolities, you guys think you have an issue. The major things you guys have are really good, and they're going for you. And he said many times when he could change the couple's own perspective on what they have, so then they could work out their differences on their own. Very often our hardship is in the fact that we think we have a hardship. One of the first things I tell couples when I meet with them is, don't feel bad that we're meeting. Why? Because the Medrash says that in the days of that the Jews were in the desert, there were thousands of children whose name was Aaron. Why? Because they had marital issues. And Aaron, the Kohen, brought peace between them. And they were so appreciative, they realized that if not for his intervention, they would have gotten divorced. Thanks to his intervention, they remained married. So when they'd have another child, they'd name it in the name of Aaron, because they realized that it was thanks to Aaron that this child came to the world. So you see that even a generation of giants, like the generation in the desert, they were all on the level of prophets. They could have marital issues, and they could keep going afterwards. Very often, if there's an issue, people think, she must be terrible. He must be terrible. No, she's a witch. He's a warlock. No, maybe you're both tzaddikim, and even tzaddikim have issues. You see, the generation of the desert, they were fine tzaddikim, and nonetheless, thousands of people were on the verge of divorce, if not for Aaron. So what he was telling me is that sometimes the key to bringing people together is to look at the other person and see the positive. Look at their relationship and see the positive. That sounds simple. It's not. Very often, all we can see is what's bothering us. Think for a minute of the people you know. Think for a minute of the people you're close to. So there are those people you like, and it's easy. You can tell me a lot of positive about them. Think about the people who are your close relatives who you don't like. What happens there? You can easily tell me what's wrong with him. This guy's obnoxious. This guy's haughty. This guy's nudnik. Each guy you can think of what's wrong with him. Now stop and think what's good about them. Think for a minute. Shurei bayit, homework. It's not easy. You're forcing yourself, right? Because once you've decided, once you look at a person negatively, it's so hard to see anything positive. But that's not fair. But that takes work. And it's hard work, but it's a good habit to get into. The Mishnah tells us that every person regarding themselves has the choice of creating a whole world or destroying a whole world. We ourselves. We are a whole world. Every one of us is the potential of a whole world. And you know what? We are that potential with our partner. And we have the same responsibility to our partner. Are we going to build the whole world or destroy a whole world? And just like the whole world could have been created for me, so that's why the Mishnah says, Hashem created the world with 10 sayings so that I appreciate how important that world is, that Hashem created it for me and that's my responsibility. Well, when I look at my partner, Hashem created it for her too. And so she's so important that Hashem created a world that's set with 10 sayings. There's a story about a church that was in the middle of a forest and it was on the verge of closing down. And further down the forest, there was a shul that was vibrant. So one of the priests went over to the rabbi and said, we want a meeting with you. So they came together, a group of priests. This is a book I think I read in Chicken Book for the Soul, I think. So these four or five priests come together and meet with the rabbi, and they tell him, look, we want your counsel. We think we're going to have to close down our church. So the rabbi said, I don't know what to advise you, but all I could tell you is that one of you is the Messiah. So they walked back, and they're all thinking about the rabbi, what a wise man. What we're going to have to close down the church, but what did he mean? So they start looking at one another, and each one starts thinking, well, he's pious, and he's giving, and each one looks at the other one's good traits, and each one starts thinking, oh boy, maybe he's the Messiah, maybe he's the Messiah. They started treating one another so respectfully, there started being a special aura around these people, because each one had such respect for the other, thinking maybe he's the Messiah. Well, people who used to pass through the forest and stop by They sensed, wow, how nicely they treat one another. They wanted to come to that place. And before long, the church was vibrant again.
Is that a good story?
No, that's a good question. I'm telling you the story the way they quoted it in Chicken Soup. Maybe I shouldn't, right? But the message of the story, is real. That if we would look at the other person as a person that's the Messiah or as a special person, then everything would look different. I often feel that if I had a long white beard and I could be a Rebbe with a big hat and whatever, then I could be much more successful, because I think that if I could convince both spouses that the other one is a huge tzaddik, then things would work out. Sometimes if you have a long white beard and you say, look, I don't know what to tell you, but he's a tzaddik. He's making it high up there in Gan Eden. Whether you'll be with him or not, that's a good question. And then you tell him the same thing, well, suddenly the perspective changes. The question is, how do we view them? It hasn't worked yet. Maybe I got to get a white tie. Maybe that'll work. At any rate, gray hair.
Crown of glory.
What?
Crown of glory.
Yeah. Okay. Everyone has advice for me. It's good. That's that was his suggestion.
Nothing people better. Go gray.
What?
Yeah. Nothing people better than dye hair.
To dye it black or red or blonde. If you dye it white, I don't know. To dye it white? All right, yeah, that's true. George Washington, all the wigs, yeah, the wig party, yeah. Okay. Okay. So at any rate, back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us Hashem revealed to us that He created the world with 10 sentences, so we have an appreciation for the world. We realize our responsibility to live up to this great world. And we realize the responsibility of what happens if someone does not. How much potential each person has. And we said this can be applied also in viewing our fellow men. How much potential that person has, that Hashem created a world with 10 sentences for that person alone. The world was created with 10 sentences. And Hashem could have done it with one. But Hashem wanted us to realize the value of each human being, and that each human being equals a world that was created with 10 sentences. So that means that if it would have been done with one sentence, we wouldn't have had that appreciation. I sometimes pity the people who get married with their first date. Because if you've invested time and effort in finding Mrs. Wright, oh, your wife is going to have it easy.
We appreciate it.
What's your last name? What's your last name?
Wright.
Right, I said, right. If you've used, if you've worked a long time to find Mrs. Wright, he's Mr. Wright, yeah. So then suddenly your appreciation changes. The people who get it 1, 2, 3, very often they're missing something. Hashem says He created the world with 10 sentences so that we appreciate the world. And we have to know that marriage is also something that for most people doesn't come so easy. I remember when I was contemplating to start dating, so I said to a friend of mine, I'll start during Ben Hazmanim. So he said, why? So I said, I figure I'll start right after Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and hopefully by the end of Nisan, I'll find Mrs. Wright, and I'll go on learning. Why should I stop more than 1 month? Oh, did he laugh. Hey, he was right. 2 years later, I was laughing too. doesn't always work that way, right? But I said, I'll try. Okay, I tried. Didn't work. And the truth is that that's an appreciation. The Torah says Hashem created the world in 10 sentences, so we'd have an appreciation. Mishnah Bet, Asara Dorot Ma'adam Ve'ad Noach. There were 10 generations from Adam to Noach, Lodea Kamayer Chapaim Nifanav, to tell us God's patience. Shekol Adorot Yum Achisinu Ve'inat She'evi Alem Me'amabul. All the generations were getting Hashem upset, so to speak, until finally Hashem brought the Mabul. So Hashem was slow to anger. That's a huge trait, to be slow to anger. Anger, the Gemara says, always causes us to err. If a person's a prophet, he loses his prophecy. He's a wise man, he loses his wisdom. He's a regular person, he loses his knowledge. The nature of anger is that people err when they anger. Hashem says, 10 generations he waited before he brought the flood. It's a lot of patience. One of the rules in marriage is patience. And more patience. Asara dorot mi Noach v'ad Avraham. There were 10 generations from Noach to Avraham. Lodia kamer chapayim lefanav. Again, to show us Hashem's patience. Shekol adorot ayu machisin uvayin. Ad sheba Avraham v'kibel tzachar kulam. All the generations angered Hashem until Avram came along and he got all of their wages. So again, that also needs work. Everyone was kept around in his merit. So Hashem kept the whole world going for the merit of Avram. There was a couple, half a year ago, that had some serious issues and weren't willing to work on them. Or at least one of them wasn't willing to work on them. When we sat down, so that spouse said to me, "I could teach you a thing or two." So I said, "Okay, I'm listening." So they said, no, but I just want to tell you that I studied all this and I know. And so, okay, you start with someone telling you they're going to teach you, so fine. But then they have to go to someone they're willing to learn from. It doesn't have to be me, but they should go to someone. We tried to talk. I tried to convince them to go to someone else, which is what I usually do. And they refused. But then they refused to do anything about what's going on between them. And finally, I gave up. So I said, you know what? I just want one thing. I want 1,000 shekel a week from you guys. And then you could go your way and fight. So that's a pretty funny thing to say. I said, I just want, pay me 1,000 shekel a week. And you guys go fight each week. And we'll talk. So they looked at me like I fell from the moon. I said, why should I give you 1,000 shekel a week and go fight? What are you talking about? So I said, look, the way you guys are behaving, it's only a matter of another few months before your kids are going to need serious psychological treatment. So I'll be your piggy bank. I'll start saving up money with you. Give me 1,000 shekel a week now. And in about 6-7 months, you'll come back. I'll just save it. I'll hold on to it for you because the way you guys are behaving, I understand that everything we've discussed isn't going to get you anywhere, right? You can't change, and she can't change, and he can't change. Fine, I agree. Keep fighting. You're right. But let's just start saving up, because what you're doing to your kids, it's only a matter of a few more months. There's only so long that kids are going to last in this situation. So we should at least start saving up, because it's going to be a bundle, the psychological, psychiatric. It's going to be very expensive. So let's just start saving up now. From Noah till Avram. And the great hope of everything, all the generations, is that future. And very often I tell parents, if you guys can't make up for yourself, but there's a future here. And if not for your sake, then for the future's sake, you have to figure out how to make it work. And you'd be surprised that there are couples with tremendous differences that were able to make it work for the sake of the children, and that's legitimate too. That's legitimate. People think a couple has to work because they love one another. Well, it's nice. We all want such a relationship. We all try to build such a relationship. But if that's not working, then they have to realize that they owe it to the kids, and they can do it for the sake of the kids. So they'll figure out, they'll live in certain senses parallel lives. It won't be the type of union that you'd like, but it's doable.
Is that a good thing?
It's not the ideal. And we hope that from that situation they could grow into a better situation. The ideal is that they realize that for the kid's sake they shouldn't make it work. But if they can't do that, then at least this. And usually from this they could grow back into that. Things aren't static. If there's a desire to make it work, so then very often you take a hiatus where you say, okay, we're just going to stay out of one another's way a little bit and we'll build back. Things have ups and downs. Everything in life has ups and downs. If we can live civilly with one another and in due time figure out how to build. You see, Hashem had patience because Hashem said it's not only about this generation, it's about what's to come. And we have to realize that our big responsibility in a home is what's to come. Yeah?
Yeah, I heard someone say that parents are the foundation of the home, and that how the parents behave, it will play out in the kid's psychology. And I've seen this happen several times where you have, there are a few exceptions, but generally I've seen the parents behave lovingly toward each other, then the kids somehow receive these vibes from the parents, and they start behaving better. And if you have other couples where, maybe they're not even treating each other unlovingly. The father's away, he doesn't have time for his wife, they're like far apart all the time, and the kids start, picking up on this too.
So there's an interesting duality in that. Kids sense things, but kids also read what they see in front of them. In chinuch, when we educate our kids, it's very often important that they know that the parents love one another and that the parents fight for one another's honor. Meaning, if the mother says something and the kids ignore her, that the father stands up for her honor and she stands up for his honor. And then that gives a very powerful message to the kids. The inverse is also true. Very often when couples fight, so then they can inadvertently or directly throw their venom through the kids. I know a young man, he's not young anymore, he's in his 30s or 40s, who used to come by the yeshiva with a wagon. Now, his story was he had a sister down south, and his sister would take him in, and she'd put him on all the pills he needed, and he'd be well-combed and well-groomed, and he'd function. And then every so often he'd run away from her, come up to the yeshiva, take a wagon and start walking around with headphones, listening to rock and roll and all kinds of music. And he'd walk around and we'd see him coming from his sister looking like a fine, almost normal person. And then we'd see as the drugs wore off, as the psychiatric medication wore off, we'd see him deteriorating, going down and down and down. And after a course of weeks, to the point where he'd make in his pants, literally, like mamash, like the lowest of the low intellectually. I once asked, like, who is he? What's going on? And I heard the following story. He went to the yeshiva as a young child and was fine and normal and played with all the other children. And then when his parents started having issues and fighting, so they got divorced, and one day the kid comes to school with a brand new coat, beautiful coat, and the next day he comes to school and he has no coat. So the principal asked him, he said, Aaron, what happened to your coat? And the kid said, well, my dad gave me the coat yesterday, and then last night I went to my mom with the coat, and so she heard my dad got me the coat, she threw it down the incinerator. And the kid went from being a normal kid to, you understand, if this is what's going on. So the kid went completely off to the point where this was a cycle. His sister would finally catch up with him, take him back down south, treat him, take care of him, bring him back to that state. He'd be by her for a few years, and then he'd come back. We saw the cycle like going over years. So it's true that parents can definitely, I mean, there's a limit to what kids can handle. Parents can definitely put kids through the ringer. There was once a couple who went to a rabbi and asked the rabbi, is it tsanua? Is it considered modest to show any affection in front of the kids? So the rabbi asked them, do you fight in front of the kids? So they nodded. So he asked them, why don't you ask me if that's tsanua? And then he said, look, if your kids see you fighting, but never see that you guys have positive affection to one another, don't you think that's a problem? You have to find that balance between being tsanua in the home and yet showing positive affection so that the kids see that as well. It's not enough that you say, no, all affection stays in the bedroom. And outside, we'll only fight. So then what do the kids see? You know, that's not good either. So we try to keep it the other way, that all fights stay in the bedroom. Couples should try to keep their arguments away from the kids. And outside, they should be able to show a positive affection, obviously in a tsanua manner, but yes, to show positive affection. So what do we see today? We saw that the world was created with 10 sentences, and we discussed the importance of speech, that is the key to building a good home. We said that the investment teaches us the value of the world, and by the same token, it's a positive thing when it takes people time until they find the right one. It helps them appreciate the value of what they've received. We said that Hashem holds us to task because each one of us is like a whole world, and so we said that that's part of the perspective we should have on our fellow men, that they are a whole world. We brought the story of how sometimes if you're only given a positive perspective of someone, you can suddenly treat them differently and see everything in a different light. Then we went on to the generations and Hashem's patience and the importance of patience in the home and the continuation of the world with that hope for that light called Avraham Avinu, and how couples have to recognize that keeping the peace in the home is not only about them too, but also about the children. That future is also contingent upon them.